This is Roy Bailey, and you're listening to Sheffield Live, number one for Sheffield music.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insights and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office on 0114 285 9500 or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock on Friday, the 9th of September 2016. My name is Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour of Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live.
We're broadcasting live on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. And in today's programme, we're talking business psychology, the psychology of business, and how to run a business psychology business with Simon Kilpatrick. He's the chief executive of Intrinsic Links. That's coming up soon. Before that, we have Penny Raven of Sheffield Soup talking about Sheffield Soup latest and Sheffield Soup plans. What's coming up? Well, you'll have to keep listening to find out. And we have Andy Stamp of the Ruskin Mill Education Trust talking also about the Merlin Theatre and something very exciting coming up there. So before we turn to our guests, quick reminder, this show is broadcasting live right now, but also available as a podcast from the Sheffield Live website, like all of our programmes. And there's a host of exciting, wonderful music and talk material for you to enjoy, explore and listen to. If you missed last week's programme, which featured Matt Hill of Collaborative Co-working Space Union Street, then that, of course, is up on the Sheffield Live website in the podcast section. All you need to do is go to sheffieldlive.org, find radio shows, look up Business Live, and then you could look up last Friday's show from the 2nd of September to hear about collaborative and co-working and tips for businesses and social enterprise startups from Matt Hill. But if you're on the Sheffield Live website exploring the podcast, there's lots more. Whatever genre of music you're into, you're likely to find a passionate producer who is knowledgeable about their music and plays music you can enjoy. So explore and enjoy. Now, before we turn to today's guest, what's going on and what's coming up in business and social enterprise in Sheffield? Well, businesses, social enterprises have been invited to join with local members of the Federation of Small Businesses to meet with Paul Blomfield MP, who, since his election in 2010, has sought to consult on an annual basis with the local business community. Every September, he holds a consultation week to present his annual report and to engage in listening to businesses and social enterprises. So his next business networking forum takes place from 8:30 to 10 a.m. next Friday, the 16th of September, at the Copthorne Hotel, Bramall Lane, Sheffield. Paul Blomfield's a Member of Parliament's Business and Skills Select Committee. His interests also include further and higher education, science and innovation, skills and apprenticeships, and wants to talk to local businesses about the committee's agenda for the new parliamentary year. So you're invited to the forum and you need to book. Obviously, it is free to attend and there are refreshments and breakfast sandwiches. Details are on eventbrite.co.uk. If you then look up Paul Blomfield MP Business Consultation Sheffield, you'll find all the details there. Also coming up this Saturday, it's Graham Grimm's Glorious Grand Gala. Grimm & Co is a new, unique children's literacy charity. They're celebrating Yorkshire's young writing talent with a star-studded cast tomorrow, 10th of September, a night of fun, wit and wonder. Joanne Harris, author of Chocolat, Jeremy Dyson, co-writer of The League of Gentlemen, will be there, and many, many more. And that's taking place at the Barnsley Civic. Details on the Barnsley Civic website, barnsleycivic.co.uk. And in last Friday's programme, we played interviews with author Joanne Harris and with Jeremy Dyson, co-writer of The League of Gentlemen. So, of course, if you missed that, You can find it on the podcast section of the website. Coming up as well, there's a special Olympics breakfast to showcase the Sheffield National Games 2017. That special Olympics breakfast is taking place next week on the 13th of September at the Copthorne Hotel. Again, details on Eventbrite, and you can also look at sheffield2017.org.uk. ChefX 2016 is coming up on Monday the 17th of October, and you can find out more about plans and changes to the ChefX event at chefx.com. And of course, it's the MADE Festival for Entrepreneurs. That's in November, and MADE was named this year as one of the top 10 events for entrepreneurs in the world. It was the only UK event to be named in a list created by Entrepreneur Magazine. So if you want to go to MADE, then go to madefestival.com to find out more details about that. Now, something else that's coming up, I've invited our first guest of the day, Andy Stamp, to talk about. It's the Merlin Theatre reopening concert. It's on Saturday, the 17th of September. This sounds pretty amazing. So let's turn to our first guest. Andy, good morning.
Hello, Jamie, and thank you very much for having me on the show.
Thank you for coming in. So, Merlin Theatre, what's happening on Saturday the 17th?
Well, it's very exciting. We're opening up the theatre to the community. And I don't know how much you know about it, but it's a bit of a roller coaster nightmare and dream ending story. 5 years ago, the theatre roof collapsed due to serious floods. And then over the last 5 years, we've got £1 million together to completely rebuild it. However, we don't have any lighting for the stage, so we need a bit of help just getting some new lighting for the stage. And that's what the concert's for.
So this will raise money?
It will.
How much do you need to raise for the lighting for the stage?
A lot more than we're going to get with the concert. We need
this
about...
one of many initiatives.
Yeah, absolutely. We need about 50,000 quid altogether.
Yeah.
But that means we'll have a very simple lighting system that anybody can come in and use, or experienced professionals can do what they like with it. So again, a sort of all-purpose for everybody lighting system.
Right, tremendous. And as you say, a roller coaster ride since the collapse of the roof.
Indeed.
Fundraising, which you've been heavily involved with.
Indeed.
And a new beginning for this theatre.
Indeed.
So where did the money come from?
All over the place. Amazingly, central government, the Educational Funding Agency, gave us a load of money. And we've had a lot of help from major trusts and charities, Garfield Western Foil Foundation, a lot of help from local trusts and charities, a bit of help from the lottery, and we're hoping to get some help from the Arts Council to do a special needs festival of music and drama in South Yorkshire.
And what is so unique and special about the Merlin Theatre for people, any listeners who haven't, who don't know about it, who haven't experienced it?
Right. Well, for 30 years, it was a major community venue. It had about 200 or 300 drama groups use it every year. And then sadly, it kind of fell into neglect. And then it was taken over by Ruskin Mill Trust, who run Freeman College and Brownwood Specialist School in Sheffield, National Centres of Excellence for Working with Kids with Autism. So we then sort of renovated the theatre, and then the roof collapsed because of floods. So the Merlin Theatre has, for a really long time, been a major community venue for Sheffield. And also it's now a centre for special needs education in Yorkshire, really. So it's doing quite an amazing job of doing two things, of being a community theatre and a centre to help kids with special needs and behavioural difficulties.
So that is phenomenal, carrying out both of those activities, those areas. And a week on Saturday, 17th of September, what can people go and enjoy? Who are the performers?
Well, we've got an amazing lineup. We've got Whiskey in the Jar, who recently supported Roy Bailey at the Cathedral. We've got Sheffield's own Dogwood Rose. We've got the amazing Pitsmore Ladies Ukulele Chorale. They are incredibly gifted and also very witty and funny. And the audiences will be welcomed in by the Bamford Village Singers. And you get sort of like almost 2 or 3 hours of really good music for only 10 quid. Better than that, Jamie, at the interval.
Could and it you'll get
be
welcomed. Better?
Yes, it can. You'll be given, you can get some food from the lovely, lovely Fusion Cafe, who will be out at the Merlin Theatre for the evening producing fantastic food.
So the Fusion Cafe and the food is tremendous. Yep. Fusion Cafe, well known on Arundel Street, but also does catering. And it is, of course, a social enterprise and part of the Ruskin Mill Freeman College family of community enterprises that supports your work.
So
tell us more about social enterprise and how Ruskin Mill and Freeman are developing social enterprises and the social enterprises that are part of the work that you do.
Quite a lot, actually. We've got not only the Fusion Cafe, which you mentioned, but also we've got the High Riggs Market Garden. We've got a vegetable distribution scheme, and we grow all the fruit and vegetables for the school and for the college and for a growing number of cafes in Sheffield now. Social enterprise is really important to us, not just because of the business ethic, but mainly because it gives our students, who a lot of them, I've said, have got autism and special needs, a really good way to learn about the world of work and to interact with other people. We're also planning to open the Merlin as a social enterprise so that students will be dealing with the public. And social enterprise is a really good supportive environment for helping young people with challenges develop their work skills and their social skills. And we've found it's a lot easier for us to open up businesses and train our own students than to have work placements, because we can create our own supportive environment. And we also have social enterprises, because we work with steel and metal and copper, we have social enterprises selling handmade, you know, knives and forks and that sort of thing. So a lot of our work is, you know, heavily weighted towards social enterprise, but not only for the financial reasons, but for the social and work ethos that we can develop, which is really supportive to young people who've got problems.
So this is all about earning income,
yeah,
and creating social impact.
Absolutely. But we feel that a social enterprise environment, you can do things that in a straightforward profit, you know, private profit making environment, you couldn't give the students so much support. And we find social enterprise really healthy and useful way for doing that. Because, as you say, it's got multiple benefits, not only making money, but actually also helping develop people's confidence and skills.
And you talked about traditional skills in terms of copper, in terms of making, and of course, the wonderful year of making is upon us. And you are badging this concert at the Merlin as part of the year of making, as well as part of the Netheredge Festival. But Sheffield City of Makers is perhaps highly relevant then to the social enterprise work that you're doing.
Absolutely. We've also got a gallery. We've got an open day for the gallery on this Saturday, not next Saturday.
This Saturday, the 10th of September.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And you can get lovely food from the Fusion Cafe. You can go to a lovely craft fair in the middle of the Butcher Works, which is a lovely old converted cutlery factory that we work in. There'll be lots of local makers there. We've also got a series of events coming up called Aesthetics of Manufacturing as part of Year of Making. And what we're particularly focusing on is the relationship between the old traditional crafts, metalwork, jewellery, pewter, all this, and new technology. So we're looking at the relationship between fluid metal engineering, digital design, a lot of the new production techniques. And Sheffield is a real world leader in some of the latest design techniques and the old traditional crafts. So the stereotype of Sheffield's old crafts dying out is being given a rebirth because of this lovely fusion between traditional craft and new technology. And people like Swan Morton and various other new technology old steelmakers are involved in this series of talks, which are going on at the lovely Butcher Works Gallery, just next to the Fusion Cafe. I'm really glad you mentioned it, because it's a really important thing we're involved with.
That's absolutely fascinating. So can people just come in, drop in on Saturday?
They can drop in on Saturday. We've also got the, as we were talking about the traditional crafts, we've got the Sheffield's oldest grinding troughs, which sounds like a horrible thing. But the grinding troughs were basically where you had a wheel and you made the steel blades, and you need water to keep cool. And the old, I think some of the world's oldest grinding troughs are in the top, and they're only open once a year as part of Heritage Open Day.
And that once a year, and that is this Saturday.
That's this Saturday, along with the craft fair and everything else that's going on.
Loads going on. That's absolutely brilliant. Well, it's a good job we got you in today, Andy.
Well, thank you for letting me come along. along. It's
but with so much happening at Ruskin Mill and Freeman, and of course with Fusion and with the Merlin Theatre, I think we're going to have to get you back on air again.
Thank you.
And Penny has been back on air many times with us, and is testament that we like to do that. But thanks for coming and talking about what's happening, Andy, today. Really appreciate it. And of course, call to action. First, on Saturday, get yourself down to Butcher Works and down to the gallery on Arundel Street.
Yep.
Secondly, a week on Saturday, it's the concert at the Merlin Theatre.
Yep.
People can find out more online. Do you want to give out the address?
It's on Facebook.
Yep.
It'll be, I don't know, we haven't done a special event page yet.
Okay, well, I can see that you are on wegottickets.com. And
we
if you
are.
Type in Merlin Theatre, you can book there. And of course, people can contact you as well. Or tickets on the door as well?
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah, I should have said about the We Got Tickets. We've got a special place on We Got Tickets.
Excellent.
It's the first time I've done that, so I'm only just learning how to do it. But they are good.
You and me both. So that's a Merlin Theatre reopening concert, Saturday the 17th of September at the Merlin Theatre. Get your tickets on the door or from Wickwire or from
wegottickets.com.
And then tomorrow, get yourself down to Butcher Works on Arundel Street. Lots going on there. Andy, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you.
And time now to turn to our next guest. We have in the studio Penny Raven. Penny, hello.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
How are you?
I'm really well, thank you.
Good. Thank you for coming in. So Sheffield Soup, we've invited you to talk about future plans and about your latest winner as well. So who's your latest winner, Penny?
Oh, wow. An amazing project by an amazing lady. It's called the Rainbow Heron Art Night Cafe, and it's a pop-up cafe. They're initially planning once or twice a month, and it's about providing a place for people that suffer with mental health challenges. And there was something that I learned in meeting this lady, that people that suffer with mental health problems, they often a common symptom is that they just can't sleep. So on a Friday night, if you're a young person, you've been out, you've had a good time, those dark hours can form a downward spiral for people. So in memory of her daughter, who only died a year ago, who had such challenges, her daughter always used to say she wished that there was somewhere she could go on a Friday night when she couldn't sleep and talk, or just something that stopped her being alone and having this downward spiral of, you know, quite negative self-talk. So the crowd decided that she should be supported in doing that. So they'll be using the money to train volunteers. So, you know, the do no harm principle of supporting people.
Yes.
So training volunteers and sourcing and locating the material that she needs to make that happen. And fingers crossed, she may even have an option for where to hold the pop-up cafe, but we'll know soon.
We'll know soon. Brilliant. So she won the pot at Sheffield Soup this time. Real-time community crowdfunding event. Businesses, social enterprises, charities, community initiatives, anyone can pitch an idea.
They can.
And you now have a huge panel of judges who volunteer to take a look and shortlist. How many judges now was it?
I think it's at 196, so people register to take part in the shortlisting, and it's an email shortlisting process, so it doesn't take too much out of people's time, although some people have breakfast meetings or team meetings with their family and engage like the young people in the family as well, which is always lovely to hear about. And typically we have around about 30 that are available to judge by the deadline, so we're trying to grow that each time. But that's really exciting. That's for anybody that lives at a Sheffield postcode can take part. Young, mature.
Wonderful. And
yes.
So judges get involved and shortlist. You then have four shortlisted ideas who get to present at Sheffield Soup. The crowd pay to come along to Sheffield Soup. All of the money goes into the pot and the crowd choose the winner.
That's exactly it. So on entry, they make a minimum of £5 donation. They receive a token, which is the voting chip. They receive a raffle ticket, because we often get donated prizes for giving shout-outs to events or people's companies or advertising. They also bribe with food as well to do that.
Yep.
And soup from the lovely silversmith. So we always have the most delicious soups. They pull it out of the bag every time. So people here, they come and listen to some music by local musicians. So, and we get really good musicians.
We
have a half hour set. And that's the musicians' way of saying thank you back to Sheffield people for supporting the project. It's all voluntary.
It's all done by volunteers.
So all of the businesses that are involved, it's volunteer time. So we've got live stream that do the most amazing AV and filming, and Johnny Douglas Design made all of our pitch pods and our podium, but he's also made that as an open source design so other soups can copy it. It's amazing actually that we all just pull together for this one day a month to make something happen.
It is incredible, which is fantastic. And then it is becoming a national as well as a worldwide phenomenon.
It is.
So what are your plans? What's coming up?
You're naughty. So after the BBC focused on us when we launched, and as a result of that, I just kept getting phone calls on a daily basis, many from the UK, but as far afield as Canada, Australia, New York, and they were asking how I had particularly done it, because it seemed to be this overnight success thing, but we all know behind every overnight success is a lot of hard work. So I did do a lot of process engineering before I even launched to make sure that it was simple, because it's got to be sustainable if it's volunteer led. We've launched in the Global Soup Foundation.
And what will that do?
That will give free and open source all of the branding, all of the graphics work, all of the forms that we use online, every single process, voting system, design for open source, absolutely everything free. But providing they follow some basic rules, where to put the logo and stuff like that. So we don't take away the grassroots nature of it, but at the same time, we start building a collaborative network. And I really didn't want anyone to capitalise on that, because it's important that it remains grassroots and supported. So.
And when is that launching?
We're soft launching at the moment. We've got a few more things that we want to get lined up. So the Charities Commission have asked us a few more questions around the charity. So we've got three questions to answer. So we're really at the hands of that at the moment. So that it could be about 3 months.
So can you come back on this programme the week you launch and tell us more about it?
Absolutely, yeah. And we've already soft launched. So South Holland Soup and Huddersfield have already taken on, we're friendly working with them, working out how the franchise will work. So it's exciting.
Superb. Great. Well, we look forward to hearing much more, Penny. And we've only got about 30 seconds left, so we're definitely going to have to get you back as well as Andy. What's coming up in terms of soup in Sheffield?
We've got our soup social on the 28th of September, Wednesday, the 20-something of September.
That'll be the 28th, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and that is to meet previous winners, meet judges, bounce around ideas, and we've also got Big Sean from the Everly Pregnant Brothers jamming with Soup Jam, our house band, so that's just going to be incredible.
That's going to be fantastic. So the best way to keep in track is to follow you on Twitter, Facebook.
And Twitter is Chef Soup, SHEFF. And everywhere else is Sheffield Soup on Facebook, Instagram. I do believe we're now on G+, if anyone uses that.
Fantastic. Well, Penny, Raven, Sheffield Soup, thank you so much for coming in. And follow Sheffield Soup, Twitter, Facebook, find out more. Penny, thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. My name's Jamie Veitch. Now, what does a business psychologist do? How can they help a business? And how do you run a business psychology business? Well, those are questions which I asked Simon Kilpatrick, who is the chief executive of Intrinsic Links, when I caught up with him yesterday at Union Street to ask about his business and ask about how business psychology can help. We'll hear from Simon now. Okay, Simon, well, first of all, hello. Thanks very much for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So first of all, what is Intrinsic Links Limited? In a nutshell, what does the business do?
Okay, so in a nutshell, Intrinsic Links, we are a team building and e-learning company. So we're a group of psychologists, and basically we look to increase job performance and job satisfaction and well-being in the workplace.
And how long have you been doing it?
We started trading as a limited company in January 2014.
So you started trading January 2014, nearly 3 years then?
Yes, yeah.
Must have been an interesting 3 years for you. What were you doing before you set up the business?
So before I set up the business, I was working as an employability researcher at Sheffield Hallam University. I also became a lecturer of psychology at Leeds Beckett, and I'm still teaching there now as well.
I see. And why then did you move into setting this business up? You're already lecturing and you're working in employability. Was it always your dream to start a business, or did you see that there was a need for the services that you do?
The initial idea came actually on an undergraduate university project. I had an idea with some friends that we could set up a mini enterprise when we were at university for one of our modules to gain some work experience and try something different. So we developed some training materials around motivation and well-being, around exam anxiety as well. So we taught students techniques on how to be motivated to do their work and also to manage anxiety around exams. And then from that I thought, well, that's a great idea. I took a work psychology module and then went on to do a master's in work psychology as well, and then set the business up pretty soon after graduating, really.
Great stuff. And who do you work with? What kind of clients do you have?
We have a broad range of clients across all market sectors, so we work with micro companies, SMEs and international corporations.
And so can you name any clients, or are there clients who you work with but they don't like to be named? How does it work?
All our clients are happy for us to name them. Obviously, there's some elements perhaps we won't go into details on. If there's any conflict in teams, that would be sort of confidential. But all the positive team working stuff that we do with them, we've got testimonials on our website from Virgin Trains is probably one of the most famous brands we've worked with. We work with Sheffield Hallam University as well.
I noticed a testimonial on the website as well from Gripple.
Yes, we worked with them recently, which was really great, yeah.
So those are well-known businesses, well-known brands, well-known names. And you also work with micro-enterprises, startups, small businesses, and you mentioned with the university, with Sheffield Hallam University too. Quite an interesting range there.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. That's fantastic because we've so many different business structures and different types of people and different job roles, so it makes my job even more interesting as well to actually try and help them gel and develop as a team as well.
Yes, and I'd like to ask you more about then how you help them, because it's a really fascinating range of clients there, and I know that you work in terms of team building, motivation and other aspects of work psychology. What are the frequent challenges that come up from clients, and then how do you help your clients to deal with these challenges?
So I would say main challenges clients face are to do, again, with effective teamwork, effective communication, and then also effective customer service as well. Our focus again is on effective teamwork and effective communication, so we teach them a range of techniques regarding that. And again, a lot of the emphasis is about building self-awareness as well, so focusing on personality, so analysing everyone's personality types, trying to get people to just raise awareness of themselves and their colleagues and their customers, to build rapport with each other, to play to their strengths. And that's also where that emotional intelligence comes in as well. So that we teach techniques to help people work more effectively within their team, but also to build rapport with customers, which again can make the organisation more efficient, and then keep customers loyal as well. So
So the business benefits there are pronounced and profound, and people can see the impact. And the process of working with them is through self-awareness, empowering people for better communication, better teamwork. And you talked about personality profiling. Mm-hmm. Are Myers-Briggs type indicators and DISC profiling, are those used by business psychologists?
Yes. Yeah, so
what do you use?
So, yeah, we use Myers-Briggs type yes. inventories, yeah, because we yes. found them to be really useful. They're quite intuitive, so, you know, that kind of model does show that people are quite flexible as human beings as well. So we always emphasise people are flexible. It doesn't pigeonhole you as such because, you know, my personality is quite extrovert, also sometimes I'm introvert, it depends on the situation, who you're with. You know, if I'm running a training session, obviously I'm more extrovert. But if I'm doing some research, I'm more introvert. So, I mean, it just shows that people are very flexible. We get people to play to their strengths, really.
Quite great. And businesses who are listening to this and are thinking about how to foster better teamwork or better communication. Now, obviously, they can approach you. We're going to give the details for how people can get in touch with you directly and take a look at the website and see the advice that you give there. Mm. But before we do that, any very simple tips where there are small changes that businesses can make, but sometimes they just don't see them. But these small changes have an effect in terms of better communication, better teamwork, better understanding of people's personalities or strengths. And I know that's perhaps a difficult question, but it might be something that you have observed in your career so far.
Yeah. I would say there are simple things that most people probably think are blindingly obvious, but it doesn't always happen. Really effective communication wise, don't be constantly sending emails to each other, especially if you're sat in the same room. Get up, go across the room, speak face to face with your colleagues, or, you know, if you happen to have colleagues that are dispersed across the country, like our clients are dispersed across the UK and internationally, so, I mean, obviously that's trickier for them to meet face to face, but if you can't do that, Skype is always a better option, because you can see each other, you've got social cues from looking at people's faces, whether it's in real life or on Skype, so it makes things more effective. Things can be misunderstood in emails as well. Tone of email, sometimes people can be just very direct, other people might find that rude, you know, things can get lost in translation. So pick up the phone, talk to each other, Skype each other, or walk across the office and chat with each other, you know, so it makes exchanges that bit more pleasant, and hopefully less misunderstandings can occur.
That's well worth mentioning, because as you say, it might be seen as a simple thing, but it's a very effective thing that is easy to ignore and yet will have profound consequences. Good, thank you. And so we've talked a little bit about frequent challenges that clients have, or perhaps in ways that you help clients, and ways you help clients to better communicate, to work better collaboratively, and so on. How, as a business owner, though, have you secured the clients that you have secured in the 3 years of nearly 3 years of trading? How did you do that?
Mostly it has been through the internet, through Google searches, people find our website, and also so I guess through some networking as well, and also word of mouth now, because, you know, people are recommending us, so that's, you know, it's always a good thing. And I guess we always undertake a lot of research and development, so we're always listening to our clients as well, and we ask them, you know, what do you want, what do you need, what, how can we help your business work better? So, I mean, clients also said they wanted more fun elements to our training, so we've made a range of really fun team building events as well as more formal training, so it depends on the tone that you want to follow. Also making it flexible as well. Clients don't always have time to necessarily take time out of work because they're running their business. So we developed an online e-learning system, yes, which we'll be launching within the next few months. So again, that gives flexibility. So we're listening to our clients again to cater to their needs. And again, I would say collaboration as well has actually been key to our success. We collaborate with and our partners with the Great Escape Game in Sheffield, so the Live Escape Game Experience. We're also partners with Alfie as well, so they're an employability training enterprise. So we're launching a Dragon's Den style sort of team building event with those guys within the next couple of weeks.
And so collaboration and finding appropriate partners has been very, very helpful for your business. Now, when someone is new in business and they don't necessarily have a track record, or that business doesn't have a track record, irrespective perhaps of what they were doing before, sometimes it can be difficult to secure partners. Any tips, any advice? How did you go about working with Great Escape, working with Alfie, and building those relationships?
Yeah, the Great Escape, again, the power of networking.
Yes.
I was at an event of Jill White, and
Jill has been on this programme, of course, met several times.
Yeah, cool. Yes, and Peter from the Great Escape was there. I saw him with his T-shirt on, his Great Escape T-shirt, yeah, handed out some flyers, and I just got chatting to him, and I was like, there's definitely a psychological link here. I'm sure we could develop some sort of package together where people can learn about personality and effective teamwork, and we could put something together for them, because, you know, the Great Escape is all about teamwork as well, and obviously having fun. So yeah, that's how we forged that partnership. So we've been in partnership for over a year now with the Great Escape, and it's one of our most popular packages as well. Also, yeah, with Alfie, that came about from co-working at Union Street, because Alfie are based at Air Street Studios, but they have strong links with Union Street, so I just went down and had a chat, and we're both like, yeah, let's do something that's going to be positive around employability and also entrepreneurship, and creativity and team bonding in the workplace. So with the Dragon's Den type stuff, we are going to help people actually learn about teamwork, but also product development. They'll be able to make their own products and sell them to raise money for their company's charity.
That's exciting.
So we're looking forward to that.
And that's further demonstration as well of the power of collaborative workspaces. Mm. And of course, Matt Hill, Union Street, was on this programme last week. Excellent. Now, you also talked about word of mouth and networking in terms of getting clients. And you have come from an academic background yourself. You have continued to work at university in Leeds, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose business psychology, occupational psychology, is a well-respected discipline, but at the same time, it sits alongside consultancy, coaching, but also other areas which can attract people who don't have the academic rigour to back up what they're spouting.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a concern of you that you have the academic rigour and the evidence base in your discipline to go and work with companies, mm-hmm. but there can be entrants to your sector who don't have the evidence base, don't have the rigour, and yet they can come in and participate in your sector? And is that a concern? Or am I needlessly worried for you?
I would say, yeah, no, it hasn't been a real concern, to be totally honest, and we haven't had any issues with competition. I would say if people do come in, maybe with slightly different backgrounds, maybe don't have the academic qualifications I do and the experience, it's not always necessarily a bad thing. If they have something that is really different and unique, it may be that, you know, they're catering to a different market sector, or you never know. It could be what we would collaborate with other people. I would say qualifications do count. Obviously, we can back things up with scientific evidence.
So, moving back to how you've grown and developed the business. You've secured clients, you're delivering results for those clients. What, though, have been the biggest challenges for Intrinsic Links and for you, Simon, since setting up and developing and growing the business. And how have you overcome those?
I would say, well, the biggest challenge was basically being able to expand more rapidly. We were lucky to get support from both Sheffield Hallam University and the University of Sheffield. So we got grant funding and also we were able to use office space for free for a year. So that was an excellent support to help us get going, you know, doing our research and development, trying out new things, you know, in a relatively safe environment. So, yeah, that was a great help, but I would say the biggest challenge was trying to expand and get money to do that. So, yeah, we applied to the government loans company to get funding so we could expand and primarily build our e-learning app and spend money on marketing, a new website, that kind of thing. And it took us a very long time to secure the funds. It took probably over 6 months, if not longer, to actually go through the rigorous process of writing a comprehensive business plan. And also they really did push us to increase our sales revenues, which was actually a good thing though, because they pushed us to work harder to try and get what we wanted. So it was a big challenge, but then it also has pushed us a lot further and made us work harder, and we are a lot more successful and we've grown significantly since then.
And at what point did you apply to that scheme?
Well, we gained the loan funding in November 2015. So we more or less started the process at the beginning of 2015.
Yes.
So it did take some time.
So that was for growth of the business. And as you say, you had to develop your business plan to the satisfaction of the scheme provider and jump through the hoops that they wanted you to do and increase your sales so there was more revenue coming into the business anyway. It sounds as though that was a supportive process, though, with the providers of the scheme not only being there to loan money to growing businesses, but to question them and to support them as well. Would you recommend that scheme to other growing businesses, to young businesses, early stage businesses?
Yeah, absolutely, because you do get your own personal advisor as well.
Yes.
And they are very supportive. They help you build the plan, and obviously they can signpost you to get support from other places as well, such as Business Sheffield and so on.
Yes, of course. So that was the government startup loan scheme, was it?
Yeah.
Which, of course, is available for startups and early stage businesses like yours. And when you actually founded the business, when you set it up, at the start of 2014, started trading, registered late 2013, what did you require in terms of support then, and what did you require in terms of finance when you started up, and how did you deal with that?
Support again was both the university in Sheffield, getting the office at the hatchery and the workstation.
Yes.
It was fantastic.
So that was through Sheffield Hallam University's enterprise?
Yeah. Sheffield Hallam, and then the USE, the University of Sheffield Enterprise as well, also was an advisor I got advice from, and we got a small grant to build our website as well, so that was very useful. Sheffield Hallam, again, lots of different meetings with advisors, Kevin Smith, Jill White, Faye Smith as well, so they're useful for a broad range of business requirements, you know, publicity, marketing, legal things, that kind of thing. All that was extremely useful, and we did get a grant funding as well, so that helped us get going. Obviously, we didn't have the overhead cost of an office, but we had the chance to go into an office place to also network with other entrepreneurs. It was a supportive and friendly environment because the university has various events, networking events and sort of celebration events really with the entrepreneurs that go through the graduate enterprise scheme.
Indeed.
So all that was fantastic, definitely, because when we first started, obviously we were a bit nervous about things. We didn't always know the ins and outs of certain marketing strategy we should take, or the legalities of certain things, taxes, accounts, etc. So, you know, we were sort of trying to find our way, so it was good good to have that support to know you can just email or ring someone to have a meeting, and you know, that was extremely useful.
Yes, quite good. So your journey as an entrepreneur then has been a journey of learning, a journey of delivering the services that you do to your clients to help them become better at teamworking, at communication, at collaboration, but also your own journey of learning how to run your business and manage your business and grow your business. Because I understand from talking with you that this year has seen sales and client numbers significantly increase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So does that present, obviously that's great news, as a growing business, if that's what you want to do, but does that present challenges in itself in terms of whether you're able to be as hands-on in delivery as you might want to be, but you also have to manage the business, and if so, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, definitely. I would say that is the new challenge now. We are expanding quite rapidly now. And so it's the challenge of, you know, balancing sort of all these spinning plates all at once. Basically we've got a bigger team now. So I've got somebody who's working on business development and marketing, somebody else who does a lot of research and development work. And then we are again growing, and we are going to be recruiting more people as well. Once we launch these other team building events and games, the e-learning platform. So I would say by the end of the year, early next year, we'll definitely recruit maybe a couple more members to our team. And every year we also have interns as well that come and work with us for sometimes a couple of weeks or a few months. So it can be like 3-6 months or so. So that's from Sheffield Hallam and Leeds Beckett. So that gives them like great work experience as well, and a credit for their university modules. But then it's also great for us to have new people come in with fresh new ideas. And it really does add a more of a buzz to the office when we've got more people with ideas contributing, so yeah, it's great.
Good stuff. So that provides opportunities for them as well, and real life experience, and it supports you, and it sounds as though with a growing team you're then presumably delegating some of the work that you would have done yourself to others.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That can be hard for some people to do.
I think at first it was a little bit difficult, but now I'm more comfortable with it now, because I know that the people that we've got are very competent and they can get on with doing the job to extremely high standards. So that gives me opportunity to do other things that I enjoy doing, because I am, I suppose, quite typically an entrepreneur. I like to jump around from project to project, and quite often that can be a bit tricky. I need to focus more, but now I've got more of a team, they take over the other bits and I can move on to try and develop a new project, which is good for me. So,
good for you. Good for the business. Indeed. So any final tips that we can offer our listeners, whatever businesses that they're in, whatever businesses they're running, and these could be tips that you can offer whether on psychology in the workplace or on collaboration and teamwork and communication, or if you prefer, you can offer tips on the systems and processes of managing and running and growing a business. But any advice?
I suppose a few on developing a business. I'd say take your time, don't rush into things necessarily and make hasty decisions. I know in the media and Dragon's Den on the television it's all like, oh, you know, you must be growing rapidly and making lots of money straight away. I think that's quite an unrealistic pressure to put on young entrepreneurs. Whereas I think there's nothing wrong with sort of taking your time and evolving organically. Obviously get as much advice as you can from university enterprise teams, Business Sheffield for example, they're extremely useful, the government loan company as well. Don't be too afraid to try and experiment with doing different things, you know, maybe different marketing strategies or even providing different services. You know, you can test things, explain to clients that, you know, this is new, that you're doing research. So just be honest with clients as well, so then you're managing expectations. If something doesn't work, then you know it doesn't work. You can move on and develop and evolve to do new things, like we have with formal training that evolved into more fun team building events. So yeah, take some risks, but obviously calculate the risk. You know, we borrowed some money to expand, but you know the risk was worth taking because we're making a lot more money now, so the loan isn't an issue for us. So yeah, work hard obviously, but make sure you take time off, because if you don't, if it's you on your own especially, you make yourself ill and then you can't work. So you know, you need to be careful. Having time out is good to reflect as well, you know, and you can come up with new ideas. I mean, often I would go to the gym and I would come up with a new idea.
Yes.
And then I'd go back to the office and be excited about, oh, I've come up with this idea now. So that's really important. And I would say, yeah, play to your strengths again, sort of psychological thing. Play to your strengths, what do you like, what are you good at? Again, psychological motivational techniques, there's all kinds of things you can use, you know, SMART goals, that kind of thing.
Indeed.
You can make yourself a sort of life aims book of things that you want to achieve. But so obviously be realistic as well. You need to plan things, you need to... I would say also, you know, things take twice as long as you think as well. So don't get impatient. Try to be, you know, be resilient as well, because things won't necessarily always go quite how you want, but, you know, keep persevering. I suppose really, yeah, feel the fear and do it anyway as well, I say.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Great. Well, fantastic advice there, Simon. Thank you so much for that, and advice that I think our listeners can use and, of course, implement in their own businesses. People can, of course, get in touch with you. You're online, website, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. What's the best way, and do you want to give out the addresses?
If you want to contact us, you can have a look on our website, which is intrinsiclinks.com, and you can email us via the website, which is hello@intrinsiclinks.com, or give us a call as well, that's fine.
Lovely.
Excellent.
Okay, well, Simon Kilpatrick, Chief Executive of Intrinsic Links Limited, business psychologist, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. It's been great. Cheers.
You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. That was an interview with business psychologist Simon Kilpatrick of Intrinsic Links. Earlier on the programme today, we've heard from Andy Stamp of Ruskin Mill Education Trust and the Merlin Theatre talking about their reopening concert, and Penny Raven of Sheffield Soup. And if you've only just tuned in and you've missed those and the full interview with Simon Kilpatrick, which was fascinating, then don't panic, because today's programme will be up as a podcast on the Sheffield Live website later on. You'll just need to go to sheffieldlive.org, find radio shows, find Business Live, and you'll be able to find the programme there. Quick reminder of things coming up. It's the Graham Grimm's Glorious Grand Gala tomorrow evening at the Barnsley Civic, a unique children's literacy charity. And we heard from Joanne Harris, the author of Chocola, and Jeremy Dyson, co-writer of League of Gentlemen, on this programme last week about Grimm and co. Also tomorrow, there's a fantastic event in central Sheffield at Butcherworks on Arundel Street. Andy Stamp was talking about that. Meet makers, explore the fantastic range of work that they do at Arundel Street, and traditional crafts in their social enterprise shop. And of course, coming up, we have the Made Entrepreneur Festival. That's coming up in November, and ChefX coming up in October. Lots more too. We ran through some other forthcoming events at the start of the programme. Now, this show will be back on air next Friday from 9 a.m. through to 10 a.m. So thank you for listening today, and do tune in next Friday. But don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live is, of course, our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk, from 10 all the way through to midday. So listen and enjoy. And we're going to play out now with a track of music by local legend Neil McSweeney. We'll play London Road. Thanks for listening today. Thanks also Sangeeta, a sound engineer in the studio. Back on air next week. Over to Neil McSweeney.